Thank you. Good afternoon. It is a privilege for me to be here. I feel like I'm a tourist taking in the sights at an academic conference. After all, I'm just a journalist, a lucky journalist to be sure, one whose book on Rizal was just recently published. But I really cannot wait to see myself sit down again so I can resume listening. I did not prepare a paper. I prepared a presentation. The next 40 slides will be at the mercy of our good friend Eric over there at the back. But I did write a 4-page paper after I made the presentation of numbered items keyed to each of the slides. So if at the end of the talk any of you still manage to remain interested, I'd be very happy to share some copies that I printed out. Let's go back to the first slide. This is a journalist's attempt at an academic-sounding title. Rizal and the Pemuda, Romantic Martyrdom in the Indonesian Revolution, Three Moments. Three different clauses because I wasn't sure what I was doing. What I'm really interested in is to trace the influence of Rizal on the militant Indonesian Pemuda in the last months of the Japanese occupation and the first years of the Indonesian Revolution. Next, please. You might say that my task is really to offer a corrective to the sweeping statements of some Filipino historians and some politicians playing at Philippine history. I think the emblematic statement was made by former Vice President Doy Laurel when he was chairman of the National Centennial Commission at the Jakarta Conference on the First Asian Republic in 1997. He said, historians recount that Rizal's death and immortal poem, Mi Ultimo Adios, translated into Bahasa, Indonesia, inspired the Indonesian Revolution. Strictly speaking, this is untrue. The Indonesian Revolution did not depend on an acquaintance with Rizal or his famous poem. But it is true that sometime during those turbulent years, militant Indonesian Pemuda, or the youth, hearkened to the spirit of Rizal. Next slide, please. What I'd like to do is to revisit three moments in time, as it were. Jakarta in Japanese-occupied territory in 1944, and then Surabaya in November 1945, and then Mojokerto in July 1946. What binds all these moments together is, next slide please, the translation by Rosihan Anwar, then he was only 22 years old, of Rizal's Mi Ultimo Adios. Next slide, please. Jakarta, 1944. When the Japanese occupied the Dutch East Indies, what we call now our Indonesian neighbors, the Indonesians were gratified when they heard the news that the Dutch had succumbed to the Nazis. Next, please. Here is a picture taken on the day that the German army occupied the Netherlands. Rosihan Anwar is the second from the left. He remembers this day very clearly because it marked a milestone in their young lives. Next piece. Now, In the intervening 3 years, during the Japanese occupation of the Dutch East Indies, Indonesian nationalists like Sukarno cleverly stepped into the breach and smuggled nationalist messages into their political statements. In the 3 years, the restless Indonesian youth started forming informal networks. This so-called Pemuda Underground, next please, was based on the asrama or dormitories, which was like a second home to many of these Indonesian Pemuda. There were many such circles, but according to the historians, there were three major Pemuda networks. Next, please. The medical faculty, located in Prapatan number 10, the asrama of the new generation Indonesia in Menteng 31, and the controversial asrama Indonesia Merdeka, controversial because it was affiliated with Rear Admiral Maeda, who was sympathetic to the Indonesian nationalist cause. Next, please. Rosihan Anwar, here in this picture taken in 1942, was a member moved along the circuits of the first two Pemuda networks, Menteng 31 and the medical faculty. His editor in Asia Raya, the main Indonesian newspaper in Japanese-occupied Jakarta, B.M. Dia, was a member of Menteng 31. The politician that he felt closest to, Sutan Sayyir, the Rizal-like intellectual who became Indonesia's first prime minister, was affiliated with the medical faculty network. Next piece. All told, I found some 40 stories about Rizal in Indonesian newspapers published between 1942 and 1945. Many of these stories were excuses to smuggle nationalist messages. Here, for example, on the death anniversary of Rizal in 1943, Asia Raya puts a Rizal feature right on the front page, on the right-hand side. You can read Jose Rizal y Mercado. And it's a very long feature profile on Rizal. This came out December 30, 1943. Next, please. And then everything changed on September 7, 1944, when the relatively new Prime Minister of Japan, Koiso, declared that Japan was going to grant independence to the East Indies. Hence, the ecstatic banner, Indonesia Merdeka. It's important to note that this was, of course, Japanese policy in response to the changing fortunes of the Second World War. Before September 7, 1944, there was no mention of eventual independence, or very little mention of eventual independence for the East Indies. It was only when the tide of war changed and it became clear to the Japanese leadership that Indonesia would make for a good ransom to be paid in case of negotiations, that the pledge to free Indonesia was made. Next, please. So it is important to realize that it is in this context, after the Koiso Declaration, when Japanese press censorship had loosened and Indonesian nationalist expectations had heightened, that we can understand how Rosihan Anwar discovered Rizal. Because it was a Japanese occupation, paper was very scarce, there were no books for sale, so a self-taught man, Rosihan, would spend many hours in the Central Library, now the National Library in Jakarta. There, sometime in December, he came across the poem of Rizal in Spanish and then in the English translation. he said, surprisingly enough, as I read the book, he saw the poem. It occurred to him, it was a very natural thing to occur to him, that perhaps it was the right time for his fellow Indonesian nationalists to learn more about this Asian hero. I thought it would be good that I could disseminate the story about Jose Rizal among our younger people at that time. Next, please. On December 29, 1944, Asyaraya, as I've said, the main, in fact, the only Indonesian newspaper in Japanese-occupied Jakarta, published a radio announcement. It was very prominent. It was the top of the second page. In commemoration of Jose Rizal. And it invited people to listen in to a two-hour special program on Radio Jakarta to listen to what was called a speech by Mr. Rosihan Anwar about the poet, patriot, Jose Rizal. The next day, next piece, Rosihan's translation appeared on page 2 of Asyaraya. This is the actual page, December 30, 1944. Oh, incidentally, because paper was scarce, the newspapers at the time usually only had 2 pages. It was just front and back. The Quezon Declaration was received ecstatically, also in the sense that they doubled the number of pages. For the next 3 days, the papers were coming out with 4 pages. So on December 30, we see this suite of stories on Rizal. Next piece. It's important to realize that as a modern-day editor, I can recognize what was being done here. Here is a package of stories organized neatly in one box. There is a photo, there is a main feature, there is even an original poem, also written by Rosihan. Then there is a translation. And the translation comes at the end, I don't know if you can still see it, with 3 footnotes. So altogether, it was a neat package. It's important to realize that the feature story proved more consequential. In other words, it was picked up in other articles, in other publications, more influential than the page 1 profile that we saw that appeared on December 30, 1943. Next piece. This is what struck me, and when I was interviewing Rosihan Anwar, what struck me from the conversation also with him, that the feature story and the poem was actually being presented on 2 levels. It's important, I keep saying it's important to realize, everything is important to realize. but what was happening between October and December 1944? MacArthur had landed in the Philippines. The newspapers in Jakarta were full of news about the American reoccupation of the Philippines. That was the context. So Rizal, the Philippines, was very much in the news. So one level was very historical. You have Rizal as the hero of Philippine independence. That's what it says. Rizal, Palawan, Kemerdekaan, Filipina. Rizal, hero of Philippine independence. But on another level, it was not just historical. It was very urgent, very topical. People were reading about the liberation of the neighboring country, the Philippines. So I think it was on that level that people started to respond to the poem. Next piece. I was struck most by the following. This is the second line. Actually, the first 2 lines of Rosihan's translation is a translation of the first line of Rizal's poem. Adios, Patria Adorada, Region del... Thank you. What Rosihan did was to use 2 lines, it was a free verse translation, to say, Selamat tinggal, Tanah Kapuja. Goodbye, land that I adore. Dera pilihan, Surya Selatan. Region chosen in the southern sun. Why did this strike me, first of all, as a Filipino reader? Because as far as I know, of the 100+ versions of the Mi Ultimo Adios, there are only 3 instances when the southern sun makes an appearance. Everything else, it's the Orient, the East. Next piece. Next piece. The first instance was in this, it's not exactly correct to call it the first translation in English of Noli Mi Tangere. It was the first adaptation, an eagle flight, and it was published in 1900. And it has actually a very interesting introduction which carries a translation which also reads, oh no, I'm already 15 minutes. Wait. I still have about 20 slides to go. Okay. Next piece. It talks about thou land of the southern sun's choosing. Next slide, please. The other instance was in 1923 when a biography was co-written by Charles Russell and E.B. Rodriguez called The Hero of the Filipinos. And there, they also write about thou land of the southern sun's choosing. So that's what struck me as a Filipino reader. But what must have struck Rosihan and other Indonesian readers was the combination of daerah and selatan. Why? Next piece. Because during the Japanese occupation, the Japanese did not call the archipelago the East Indies or Indonesia. Sometimes they would just refer to the central island, Java, or more often, they would say daerah selatan, meaning the southern regions. South, that is, of an expansive Japan. I think that that combination, this unusual translation of the first two lines with the southern sun, was one of those things that struck or that hooked or attracted the attention of Rosihan. So an Indonesian reader in 1944 would have conflated the Philippines of Rizal's time with the Indonesia of his own time. Next piece. Okay, I'll just go through this very quickly. Surabaya was where the iconic battle of the Indonesian Revolution was fought. Next. Officially began on November 10, 1945. Next, please. Rosihan Anwar was dispatched by Sukarno to reconnoiter, to find out what was happening in Surabaya. And he was there for 3 days, November 11 to 13. Next, please. It was a bloody battle. It went on for almost 4 weeks. In the end, the Indonesians lost, but because they had demonstrated the capacity of the resistance, this proved to be ultimately decisive. Rosihan, next please, on the day that he left, November 13, 1945, was handed by a Pemuda rebel, a rebel magazine, whose name he forgets now, printed, he says, on bad paper. And there, when he went through it, next slide please, he saw an excerpt from his own translation. He said, they only ran a few stanzas. That's what he said. Now, I think what happened here is that, this is not the publication, Merdeka. I'm only giving an example of, here on the left ear is a quote from Rizal, but it was misremembered. It was an incomplete quote. I think what happened with the Surabaya Rebel magazine was somebody quoted, perhaps from memory, some of the lines from Rosihan's translation. And those were the magazines that were being read by the rebel soldiers on the front line in the Battle of Surabaya. Next piece. Okay, maybe we don't have to do this. This is another quote from Rizal. Next. Fast forward to July 1946. Next piece. Bhakti is one of those heartbreaking stories. It was a rebel magazine that did not last a year. I think it was from January to November 1946. In July 1946, it devoted its 2 issues to Philippine independence. Why? Because again, the Philippines was back in the news. The Americans, wearied by the war, had decided to hand over sovereignty to the Filipino government. And so there we see Filipino independence is the hope of millions in Asia. I can't see. Next piece. And lo and behold, many, many stories on the Philippines, but in the second July issue, we have a word-for-word transfer of Rossi Han's poem. Again, chosen by the rebel editors. There is no attribution to Rossi Han, and there are two changes. Jose Rizal is spelled Jose Rizal with a Z. And next piece. The second line, chosen region was changed to the Philippine region. Next piece. Just two slides. Last two slides. I'm very conscious of the limits of my own research. I'm also conscious of the limits of Rizal's influence. For example, there is no talk about his novels at all, at least in the period that I covered. However, next slide please. The printed matter, to which I limited myself, presents clear proof that Rizal did indeed inspire Indonesian Pemuda. They responded to two things. First, his poem, his deathless poem of sacrifice. And second, his example, precisely, of self-sacrifice. Okay, thank you very much.